it is bad joke time. It's the 7th of May. When is the final, folks?
23rd.
Yes, May 23rd. It is a Thursday. And believe it or not, we're supposed to be here at 8 a.m. in the morning, but don't worry, I'll stick around. But that's when it's supposed to be. And what will the final be? It will be cumulative, but it'll be very general. There'll be specific questions about options and futures and margining and shorting, which we're going over the last 2 weeks. But there'll be general questions, the same questions you've seen on the exams before, about stocks, bonds, mutual funds, short-term investments. And there will be calculations, the same calculations that you've seen, constant perpetual, discounted cash flow model, the bond yield model, the bond pricing model, and then there will be some essay. Okay, so we'll discuss that even more.
Can
you do more calculations? Oh, you like the calculations better. Well, you know, they take longer. Yeah. Okay. Now, all right. So let's take a look at how we're doing. Apple's coming back, huh, folks? Have you given up on Apple? Oh, okay. Well, it's coming back. It's only down 6%. Toyota's done really well for us. Procter & Gamble, yippee. Mickey D, blech. And then Coca-Cola. And UPS, too. So we picked some good ones. 9%. That's pretty darn good, folks. You should congratulate yourself. And so we're going to continue with options. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a good joke? How about a Microsoft joke? Not a Microsoft joke? Microsoft is a joke. That is so true. So anyway, this guy meets this woman and they fall in love and get married. It turns out she's been married 3 times before. Have you heard this one before? And on their wedding night, he knows this. The wedding night she says to him, she says, "I know you're not going to believe me, but I'm still a virgin." And he says, "Wait a minute, you don't have to play this game with me. I know you were married 3 times before." She goes, "No, it's true. You have to believe me." So he says, "All right, what happened to the first husband?" "Oh, my first husband had a medical problem. And I wanted children, so that's why I divorced him." He said, "All right, what happened with the second husband?" "Oh, the second husband was a homosexual. He wasn't interested in me. And I wanted children, so that's why I divorced him." And so he goes, "Okay, what happened with the third husband?" She says, "Oh, the third husband was Bill Gates." And he says, "So?" She said, "Well, we would just sit on the bed every night and he would tell me how good it was going to be." And the guy goes, "Well, I guess that makes sense. What would you expect from a guy who names his company Microsoft?" Okay, fine. Well, of course she was. She wouldn't lie. Mr. LaMonica. Okay. All right, so we have discussed options. I'll get to you in a minute. And we're going to continue with them. And we went through all the stuff that made your head little spinning, call options and put options and confusing and all that stuff. And now we're going to talk about in the money and out of the money. In the money means that the call, and if it's a call option, it actually has some value. So if we were using $20 in the first part of the presentation. Now I switched to $50. I don't know, but I did. I apologize. So the strike price or the exercise price, if you remember those names, is $50. That's what the buyer can buy the option for from the seller. Now, what happens if the price goes above $50 to $54? Then the option is called in the money. Would it make sense for you to exercise an option? Buy a stock that was selling for $54? Would you buy it for $50? Sure, because you could turn around and sell it for $54 right away and make $4. So we'd say that this option is $4 in the money. If the price were below the strike price, right, in this case $47, would it make sense for us to exercise this option? No, so this option will be $3 out of the money. And that's the phrase they use, and you're supposed to learn it. Of course, if it's selling at the strike price, it says it is said it is being sold at the money. And then the same thing is true for a put, except it's all reversed. A put is like a mirror image of a call. It's an option to sell the stock. So if the price is below the strike price, then it's in the money. And if it's above the strike price, it would be out of the money. Does that make sense? Put the mirror up. And if you could sell a stock for $50, which we're selling at $46, you got a darn good deal. You can put the stock to somebody at $50, and everybody got it? Nathan didn't get it. And Eduardo. So you can put the stock to somebody at $50 and buy it back, or turn around and buy it back at 46. If it were above, then it would be out of the money. And this is what drives people nuts. The fact that we've got mirror images of two different transactions. Now, let's take a look at an example. Again, we're using $50. If the strike price were $50, theoretically, thank you, the strike price were $50, theoretically, every dollar above $50, if it's a call, the call buyer is making money. And every dollar below the strike price, the seller is losing money. Because remember, that person, it's a contract, the person who sold, who took the premium, is on the hook to buy, you know, to sell that stock to this person who is the call buyer option. So as the price goes up, that person is making money who bought the option. The person who sold the money is sold the option is losing money. But this graph does not take into account the fact that the option costs something. So say the option price, the premium, were $10. Say the option was $10. Now that option sell at $10 is a little high. Usually sell for a few bucks, but still, if it were $10, you have to get $10 past the strike price before you actually break even. And that's what this is called. It's called the break-even price. Because this guy right here had to pay $10. He's down $10 right from the start. So the price has to go above the strike price by the cost of the option. We're not even considering commissions. Until it hits the strike price, now he starts making money. The seller, now where's my Rogelio? He's not here. On Tuesday, he was jumping up and down saying he wanted to be the seller. The seller made $10. No matter what happens, the seller makes $10. And once it passes the strike price, now the seller starts to lose money. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay, let's continue. The exact same opposite mirror image happens with put options. Theoretically, for every dollar below the strike price, because this guy can put it to him at $50, this guy is making money, the person who bought the put option, the seller is losing money, theoretically, but it doesn't take into account the fact that the option cost money, so this guy right off the bat has to pay $10, assuming a $10 price for an option. And until it hits $10 minus the strike price, does he actually break even? Now he starts making money. The seller makes $10 and doesn't lose anything until he hits the break-even point. Now he's starting to lose money. Make sense? Yeah? Are you excited about this? Aren't you happy that we're not going to do these calculations on the final? These calculations will not be on the final, but if you do take the Series 7, you are exactly, they're going to have to be there. And we discussed the time premium on Tuesday. Even if the option is out of the money, there will typically, where were you? You were supposed to be here. This is why I could start to commit homicide to my students. Student side, it's called. I could start to commit. Would you, when he comes back. Got your calculator?
Yeah.
Chapter 6 and chapter 10 formula sheet? Okay. Student side. We had a friend who used to say about her husband, I'm going to commit, his name was Martin, I'm going to commit Martin side. Martinasia, that's what she called it. Martinasia is going to kill her husband. And then he passed away of a heart attack, and she was so sad. Okay, so the time premium, I know, it's bizarre. The time premium is the amount by which the option price exceeds the options in the money value. If you have an option that's out of the money that still has value, and we saw some examples of that on Tuesday when we took a look at the, we looked at Google, right, I think. That option only has time value. If it's out of the money, why would you buy it? Well, you're hoping that the price is going to change before the option expires. If an option is out of the money, in the money, it will sell for more than the amount is in the money because of the time value. And if an option is out of the money, it will still have some time value because there's time for it to change as the underlying stock price changes. And then this is where we ended on Tuesday. Don't forget commissions. In these examples, we did not even include the cost of the commission. The commission is charged whenever an option is bought or sold. Both buyer and seller pay a commission, and a commission is then charged when and if the buyer actually exercises the option and buys or sells the stock, and again, both buyer and sellers pay the commission. When you include the cost of commissions, it makes it that much harder to make money in options. But if you're a broker, you understand why the brokers even created, broker terms created these things? Because they saw Las Vegas, they saw people gambling, making money. Well, Las Vegas making money, not the people gambling. And they wanted some of that. So that's why they've created it. And if you are an unethical broker, you would simply love to have your clients get hooked on options. Because it's a great way to generate commissions. Because they expire, right? You buy a stock, if a person buys a stock and they're happy with IBM or whoever they buy, and they hold on to it for 5 years, are you going to make any more money off of them? No. They paid the commission. But if they buy an option that's only good for 3 months, to get a little more action, they got to buy another one. Now, speculating. You will hear, if you feel the market price of a particular stock is going to move up, if you anticipate a drop in price within the next 6 months, it is a highly risky investment strategy. I crossed out the investment. But it may be suited for the more speculatively inclined. Folks, these are from the textbook. Not the chapter, the edition 6, but they're still from one of the textbooks. The flaw in this argument is this. There has never been a successful method for predicting stock prices in the short term. We have already statistically shown that in the short term, they are random. You may feel or you may anticipate that the price will go up or go down, but that doesn't mean it will. It's not investing, it is gambling. Plus, you may be correct, but your option may expire before you are proven correct. Hedge it. Now, let's take a look at option strategies. Here is what you're going to hear from people, the rationale. Well, there are some reasons when options actually make sense, and they are called hedging transactions. It is a transaction or a series of transactions made to reduce the risk of adverse price movements in an asset. Hedging, when you hear the word hedging, people go, oh, what are you talking about? Think of it as insurance. Have you heard the term hedge your bet? Hedge your bet, if you've heard the term, don't worry about that if you haven't heard it. But it means, I want to do, you're done? Okay, good man. Okay, good luck. Okay. You can think of insurance, he got here at 9, so he didn't do it that fast. And although insurance, you can think of it as an option as insurance. I mean, we've been thinking of it as gambling, but there's a way you can think of it as insurance. And although insurance can be useful, It ain't free. You got to pay for it. You pay for it in the price of the option and the commissions. Investors can use hedging strategies when they are unsure of what the market will do. A perfect hedge reduces your risk to zero, except you got to pay for the option, you got to pay for the commission, so it's not zero. You have to pay for insurance. So you own 100 shares of Butterfly.com. You ever heard of them? Butterfly.com? Yeah, they can make blue steam. It's going to be really big. Don't worry. Okay. It's currently selling for $50, and you're afraid the price will plummet. You know, you've heard some rumblings, and you're afraid it's going to fall. So what do you do? Now, most people would say, sell the stock, right? But I don't want to sell the stock. I bought it at $5. It's up to $50. If I sell the stock now, I've got to pay tremendous taxes. Besides, I think it might actually do well. So what you can do is you can purchase a put at $50. What happens if the stock price goes down, you bought a put? What's going to happen to the option price? You guys are not listening. Okay. maybe you're just going. Let's look at a put. If we bought a put at $50 and the price started going up, would we bother selling a stock at $50 when we could sell it at $55?
No.
No, that wasn't very smart. No. But that's not why we buy a put. We buy a put because if the price goes down, the value of the put, want to turn that off? Yes. If the value of the price goes down, the put value is going to go up. So you see, it is offsetting the loss in value of our stock. Because if our stock is at $50 and the price goes down, now our investment is worth less. But if we bought a put, the value that the price goes down, the stock, will be offset by the value of the put going up because the price went down. Huh?
Exactly.
Isn't it confusing? You're saying, I have 100 shares at $50. My position is $5,000. If the price went down to $40, what's my position?
$4,000.
I lost $1,000. But if I buy a put at $1, if the price goes down from $50 to $40, the option is going to go from $1 to $11. It will offset the fall in the price of the stock. That's called hedging. You understand? So it's insurance. You see how it's insurance? But it ain't free. We had to pay the dollar for the option plus the commission.
Is it $1 times 100?
$1 times 100, right, because every contract is worth 100 shares. And so insurance, this is called, actually has a name, it's called a protective put. You're protecting the value of your shares by buying a put so that if the value of the shares goes down, the value of the option will go up. But it ain't free. Using options as insurance is one way to keep your broker very happy. What's going to happen? The option is eventually going to expire. And then you're going to have to buy the insurance again if you want to buy the insurance. If you're sure the stock will fall, why not just sell the darn thing? That's my advice. Now, it gets better. Straddles. And where is Rogelio when I need him? His mind was already working. He wanted to sell both a call and a put at the same time. Huh? That means he's going to get money from the sale of the call, get money from the sale of the put, and as long as the stock doesn't move a whole bunch, he's going to get to keep that money and the option will not be exercised against him. And that's called a straddle. The simultaneous purchase, that's the risky guy who wants the stock price to go up or down, or sale, that's the Rogelio guy who's saying, I'll just collect the premium, I'll be happy that it doesn't move, of a put and a call on the underlying financial asset. If the price is volatile in either direction, you're going to make money. But you have to pass the break-even point for both the purchases plus the commissions. If the stock price is non-volatile, you would sell, write, make, they all mean the same thing, the straddle and hope that the price does not change greatly. So you're going to get send two commissions to your broker. Isn't your broker going to love you? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so why would one really do this?
That's a darn good question.
I mean, they have a name for it, straddling, but it's like going to the horse races.
Yeah.
And betting on
two different
horses.
Exactly. You're basically betting that if you buy both, you're betting that the price is going to be volatile. Now, you don't care which direction. You don't care if it jumps up high or jumps down low. You're going to make money if it does that. But you got to pass the break-even point for both the purchases.
And how? What's the actual
likelihood of that happening?
Right.
Is there a percentage of success percentage?
I don't know the numbers, but I can't imagine it's that great.
I'm sure people are trying to, those are making commissions,
Well, if you're the broker, exactly. Right. If you're the broker, I...
Great.
You didn't lose that much. If you're the writer, though, if you're the maker, you're going to get the premiums in your pocket, and you hope that the stock doesn't go up high or doesn't go down low. Okay? Here's an example. Butterfly is selling for $50, but his price is extremely volatile. You purchase a call at 50, you purchase a put at 50. So the price of the call is $4. The price of the put option is $5. Now, if it goes above $5, it's going to be in the money, right? You're going to make money on the call. If it goes below $4, you're going to make money on the put. But wait a minute, you bought both of them. It has to go above 9 or below 9 for you to actually make money. And that doesn't even include the commissions. So you have to be able to see that this thing is going to be really volatile. You're going to...
So that means the break-even point is more than...
Yeah, because you have two purchases. Now you bought a call at $5, and you bought a put at $4, so that means it's got to go 5 and then 4 in either direction. It doesn't matter which direction it goes, but it's got to jump by $9 before you actually make any money, not including the commissions. At least $9. Right, I know. You bought the call at $4, you bought the put at $5, so the price has to move at least $9 either way before you break even. And we did not even include the cost of commissions. You paid two commissions for the straddle and possibly one more for exercising the actual option. Brilliant strategy, huh? Wait, it gets better. Spreads. The simultaneous purchase and or sale of two or more options with different strike prices and or expiration dates. Stock selling for $50, you buy a call at a strike price of $50, you sell a call at a strike price of $55, you pay for the call at $50, you got paid for the call at $55. If the stock price rises, you'll make money.
People at $55 and stuff.
I certainly hope not, but I assume they do. You understand? This is some broker's probably going to get you interested in this. Yes.
So it's 2008. Someone would have done that.
Oh yeah. If you have been selling and if you've been selling puts in 2008 or buying puts in 2008 when the prices were plummeting, you did really really well.
Well, even if you were doing that.
Even if you're doing that because it was so volatile. That's right, because it was volatile in the up directions too. See, options do well when prices are volatile. The problem with that is the price of the option goes up. If you're looking at options, in fact, if you look at the bonus assignment, we'll take a look at the bonus assignment. Why don't we just take a look at it now? Who wasn't here last week? Okay. Cassie's around? Yeah, you got one, but you didn't bring it, of course. Maybe you brought it. Okay, look at the bottom. It's a bonus assignment, folks. And what I hope to do is to scare you from doing it. Stock options. If you look at the bottom of the other page, this page. What I want you to do is go on Yahoo or wherever and record the price of the June 2013 options for both Procter & Gamble and Google. Now, this I wrote a few weeks ago, and the strike price I used $80 and $800. And, of course, they might have gone far away from there. But you want to get as close to this current stock price as you can. And I want you to record that price, and then 1 week later come back and see how much they have moved. Or watch it every day if you want. And you'll see that the prices of options just go all... It's on the other side. So So there. So Oscar was absolutely right. During a time of high volatility, you could have made or lost a tremendous sum of money very quickly.
Time, like these are specific times of periods, right?
Well, no, there's always volatility somewhere.
No, but okay, so that was the 3 months and the 5 minutes?
I'm sorry? Well, the options, let's go look. I don't want to spend too much time. Let's go to P&G, Procter & Gamble, and look at their options. And they're down to 77. 77? Okay. So what you would do, what did I have it at? 80? And they've fallen a little bit. So 77 and less than 50. So here you see... You see this? Right? These are options that are in the money. Because I can buy a stock that's currently selling for $77.50. I can buy it for $70. Yippee, right? And if it's above the strike price, it's out of the money. See, that's why it's a different color. And everything is exactly opposite when you... I'm sorry? These are May. May 2013. They always expire on the third Friday of every month. You studied the chapter, didn't you, over the weekend? Yeah, I know. Nod your head yes. Okay, good. The third Friday of every month. And so I'm looking. You can do the May, but you only have until next Friday.
But that's what I'm saying.
Not this Friday, next Friday. May 17th? Is that the third Friday? Yeah, I think so.
So when they expire...
Poof! They're gone.
Right.
So somebody is paying today 44 cents for the right to buy Procter & Gamble at $77.50. Even though the price is $77.49, they are paying 44 cents right now for the ability to buy this stock at $77.50, hoping that within the next 7 days or 8 days until next Friday, that the price is going to go up. And then they'll be able to sell the option before it expires, or turn around and buy the stock at $77.50. Make sense? Somebody else is paying 70. Now this can't be right. That's an anomaly. Something's wrong here. This is the last price, but no. Oh wait a minute. They're both $77.50. Something's not right here. 80. Something's not right. These are probably bogus. That one's probably bogus. That makes more sense. Somebody else is paying 4 cents for the right to buy it at $80. They're really bullish. They're thinking in the next week and a half, Procter & Gamble is going to jump, and that 4 cents is going to jump to $1, $1.40. You see the tremendous gains that you can get? But if it doesn't happen, what happens? Poof. It disappears. What? Magic vacuum cleaner. And so what I want you to do is look at the June, and you'll notice the June have a little bit more money involved here because there's more time value. These people are willing to pay $1.53 times 100 for the privilege of buying Procter & Gamble at $77.50 because they think in the next 7 weeks until the third week in June, the price is going to jump above $77.50. Now, are they right? We'll see in 6 weeks. And then everything goes in reverse when you go down to the puts. It's all reverse. Anything above is in the money. Anything below is out of the money. Did I answer your question, Dave? Okay, I hope so. All right, let's go back. Now, the possibilities are endless, and so are the commissions. Selling options. Now, folks, Rogelio is not here, but he immediately picked up on this because this is his job already. But he's not in options, but his business. So he immediately said, oh, I want a piece of this action. We've been always discussing buying options, but remember, it's a contract. There's another side of the coin. There's another side of the transaction, and that's the seller, the writer, the maker. I don't know why they use three different names to confuse you. I guess that's why. It allows the individual investor to play the part of the casino. You become the Las Vegas casino, and the option buyers are betting against you. And more often than not, the option writer is right. Why? Because most options expire worthless. Have I mentioned that? I think I did last Thursday. I think I did. It's right. once. No matter what happens, the option seller gets the buyer's premium. So, if and whenever I begin trading options, which probably ain't never going to happen, but it will be as an option writer. But that doesn't mean you can't lose money. You can. You can lose money. You can lose a lot of money, depending if the price moves quite a bit. You can lose a ton of money. And so that's why I'm not interested in losing money. I don't want to be part of it. But that doesn't mean it's not a good strategy. Covered options. We already discussed this, right? You own the stock. And so you say, okay, I will write a call against that stock. So that if it does get called away from me, I don't have to go out there and buy it. I already own it. I can just deliver the shares. And we saw that example on Thursday when we had the person say, hey, I'm the person who writes the option. I got the 100 shares. I can deliver them. Naked options are where you don't own the shares, and they can get you in big trouble. The amount of the return to the option writer is always limited to the amount of the option premium received. But the loss can be substantial. Even on, well, it won't be unlimited, but there are times when stock prices jump 20% one day for whatever reason. A new transaction has occurred. Somebody says, I'll buy out that stock at a 20% premium. There was this instance several years ago when Kmart and Sears merged. Now, how's that for... See, I'm not a big retail fan, but do you think two companies that are drowning, you put them together, they're going to do better?
Of course.
Yeah, okay, well, the stock price of, well, one of the, I forget which one it was. Was it Kmart? Yeah, the stock price of Kmart skyrocketed when Sears said they would buy it, or the other way around. It went from 40 to 112. In one day. So if you had written a call on that,
you made bank.
No, you got, if you bought the call, you made bank, because you could buy a stock at 40 that's selling for 110, but if you wrote the call, you were screwed, because now you got to go out and buy that shares at 100 and whatever it was, 20. Exactly, and sell it to somebody for 40 bucks. Yeah, so you could still lose a lot of money. So you own the stock you're considering selling. It's a covered call. You write a covered call, receive the premium, so you get the dollar in your pocket, times 100. If the stock price jumps substantially, the stock will be called away from you. Here's a stock, you're going to be forced to sell. If the stock price stays the same or goes down, the option will expire worthless. Cool! You got the dollar in your pocket, the option's gone, you're no longer under the gun. You still have your shares. You could then write another covered call. Do you understand? In either case, you get to keep the premium. This strategy is only one of the two option strategies I personally would ever consider. So here's an example. Again, we're using $50. You own butterfly.com. You have 100 shares of butterfly.com. And it's currently selling for 50 bucks. You bought it for 40. That's not important, but I just wrote it down there. You write a covered call at 55. So it's selling at $50. It's out of the money. And you get 500 bucks. If the stock price jumps over 55, well, then it's going to be called away from you at 55. Oh, well. But you actually got $5 for the call. You sold it for 55. So it's actually if you sold it for $60. Are you with me? You see what happens? It's very cool. It's very cool. It allows you to enhance your returns. No. If I ever did, if I ever got involved in options, this is what I would do. If the stock price stays below 55, well, cool. You got $5 in your pocket, and now you can do it again. Right? If it drops, then who cares? They're not going to want to buy it from you if it drops below 50. But what are you going to do with the shares now? You were considering selling. Do you sell the shares? And then if you do sell the shares and it jumps back up above 55, oh well, you got to go out and buy them and then turn around and sell them. So it's not without its problems, folks. A naked put is another transaction that I would consider. You are considering purchasing stocks and you have the cash to make the transaction. You see, the industry calls that, even if you have the cash, they still call that a naked put. I don't consider it a naked put. If you have the cash, you're covered. You can cover the transaction. You run a naked put, again, you receive the premium. If the stock price falls substantially, the stock will be put to you. You'll have to purchase it, but you got the cash. If the stock price stays the same or goes up, the option will expire worthless. You get to do it again. Get the buck or whatever, $3 in your pocket. But either way, you get to keep the premium. So here, you're considering purchasing it. It's currently selling for $50. You have the cash, which means you have 100 times 50, or $5,000. You write a naked put at 45, and you get maybe $3. So $300, because everything times 100. If the stock price falls below 45, the stock will be put to you at 45. But you got $3, so it's as if you bought it at 42. Because you get that $3, and you get to keep that $3. If the stock price stays the same or doesn't go below 45, you get to do it again. But what if the stock price goes down to 10? You're screwed. You've got to sell a stock at 45 that's currently selling at 10. Oh, well. I mean, you have to buy the stock. You have to buy the stock at 40. I know. I keep growing this current enough. You have to buy the stock, but you got the cash. You knew that was your risk, and you had the cash. So they call it a naked put, but it's really not naked because you have the cash. All right. So you guys are thoroughly confused, and I apologize. It's not only that reason. I mean, you got to be ready for that. But it's that.
Because if we studied, because we did, then we would.
Say that again. It is. I'm telling you, folks, it's one of the hardest parts about the Series 7. And if you can take the Series 7, you got to deal with it. Now, ESOs. Let's get through this really quickly. 10 minutes for employee stock options. Because depending on what industry you work in, you may wind up being offered ESOs, employee stock options. It's an option granted to an employee by a company, giving the employee the right to buy shares of the stock in the company at a fixed price for a fixed amount of time. They have some very big differences between the calls and puts that are sold on the exchanges. They can't be sold. They are always call options. They are always options to buy. You want the company you're working for to do well. The employers want you as an employee to want the company to do well. They're not going to give you puts. They're going to give you call. They want the stock, the price goes up. They usually have a vesting period. They are not usually allowed to be exercised for at least 3, 5, 7 years. And if you leave the company before the time they are vested, you don't get to take them with you. So you see what they're doing? They're trying to get you on board. They're trying to get you excited about the prospects of the company. So that if the company does well, you're going to do well. Because your employee stock options will do well. You remember the joke at the beginning of the presentation? Reprice my options. Okay, well, this is what we're talking about. During the tech boom in the late 1990s, employee stock options were used extensively to attract employees to startup companies. During the 2000 to 2002 bear market, they were the subject of much controversy, and there's still some fallout and publicity as companies and the Securities and Exchange Commission continue to wrangle over how and if they should ever be used. Currently, companies can give employee stock options to their employees, and they don't have to pay anything. They're giving you something that may be worth something later on if the stock does well, if the company does well. But right now, they're worthless. They don't reduce the company's earnings. Why? Because they're not giving you anything of any value. It may become worthwhile later on. Many companies have agreed to expense stock options, but how do you come up with a price for something that's worthless? It ain't easy. To make matters worse, while some people became fabulously wealthy during the internet mania, did you ever hear the guy John Moores or Moores, whatever his name is? The guy used to own the Padres. Made tons of money off of these things. Many other people were socked with crippling tax burdens on worthless pieces of paper when their companies collapsed. Huh? How can that be? How can you be taxed on something that was now worthless? Well, that's part of our tax code. If you are under the tutelage or affected by the alternative minimum tax, the dreaded alternative minimum tax, it doesn't care if you never exercise the options. If the options became worth a certain amount of money when they were vested, you still owe taxes on those things, even if you never exercised them. So some people were hit with $50,000, $60,000 tax bills on something that was worthless. Can you imagine getting a bill for $60,000 and the thing that was, that you got the bill for was actually worthless? That's the tax code. Wait a minute. Did you ask how do you come up with a price for something that's currently worthless? Yes, that is correct. Since many employee stock options are out of the money, often by a large amount, or cannot be exercised for a long time, or both, how does the company put a price on them? The financial world currently uses a system called the Black-Scholes option pricing model. And it may sound impressive, but in my humble opinion, it's very silly. That's chapter 16. We are going to ignore that. But this is what they do. The Black-Scholes model might say, okay, the stock is currently selling for $7.50. The employee stock option has an exercise price of $10. So they have to wait until the stock goes above $10 before it's worth anything. It's out of the money, and they can't sell it to somebody else. It's only their option. They have to wait until they're vested, and it goes above $10. Plus, the option cannot be exercised for 3 years. It's not until 3 years until they're vested. The Black-Scholes model might say that the employee stock option is worth $2.50. Huh? You can't sell it. You can't exercise it for 3 years. It's out of the money. How is it worth $2.50? Plus, the stock price might never go over $10. In which case, the options are worthless. Reprice my options. And if you're unfortunate enough to be affected by the AMT, you might have to pay taxes on it. That's the kind of world we live in. So you may get excited when you start working for this startup company that says, we're going to give you employee stock options. And you go, oh, good, that's good. Remember that you may never, ever get a dime, and you might get hit with taxes on them. Then they'll say, okay, no problem. But you see why they want to do that? Because they don't want to pay you as much, so they get you excited about this, so they can pay you less. Internet startup companies used these things like crazy back in the late 90s because they didn't have enough cash. But they needed to attract talent. And if the company did well, it was an eBay or an Amazon or a Google, you became fabulously wealthy. I mean, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars for some people, billions for people like the guy from Farsbook. Zuckerberg? Yeah. Now, stock index options. Remember the S&P 500? Well, you can buy options on indices. A put or a call option written on a specific stock market index, such as the S&P 500. The stock market index option allows an investor to purchase or sell an option that responds to the stock market index. So you can say, oh, I think the market's going to do really well. I can buy a call on the Standard & Poor's 500. You can hedge a portfolio by purchasing a put on a stock index option. If the market goes down, your stocks go down, the put's going to go up. There's that insurance idea. And there are, you know, dozens and dozens. Whether speculating or hedging, folks, whether you're guessing or whether you're protecting your portfolio, it's still risky and expensive. And there are options on interest rates, there are options on currencies, and then I've never understood these things. They're called leaps. Options normally expire within a year. Why? Because then the SEC doesn't get involved. They're not registered securities then. They are registered, but they don't have to go through this certain process if they're less than a year. But there are options that are more than a year, And they still don't go through that. I don't know how they do that. They're called leaps. But just, you don't actually see, if you go online, you'll see, it'll say June 2013, January 2014, January 2015, you know, 2 years from now, and I don't know how they get away with that. And then what are warrants? They are long-lived options that give the holder the right to buy a stock in a company at a price specified in a warrant. So the warrant is like an option. But it's a little different. It's usually given to you when you buy the stock or they have a stock split or some other thing, and they say, here, and we'll throw in some warrants. And the warrant is a security that you can buy and sell. They're often given to employees as compensation. Unlike options where each contract represents 100 shares, one warrant represents one right to buy one share of stock. And they're always call. You're hoping that the stock goes up. So what are the final, and you don't even understand what I'm talking about, so don't worry about it. What are the final comments on options? What are you going to do with options? Stay away from them. That's right, folks. They are gambling. And then, I'm not going to go to this website, but there's a website called Optionetics. They're not the only ones. But these websites try to get you excited about buying and selling options. And I hope you just stay away from them. Okay, now here's a handout, and we don't really have time to go through these, but the commentaries are on the website. Commentaries on the website and the answer keys on the website. These are, because you're really excited about this, I can tell, these are the kind of problems that you will see on the Series 7 that will drive you up the proverbial wall. And you have to be able to do these. There's no, I think there's enough for you there. Hang on a minute, James. You have to be able to do these. So let's read number one. You think Big and Oil and Malted Balls candy is going to be the next big thing. The stock is currently selling for $29. You purchase a call options contract to buy 100 shares at $30. The price of the option was $2. So it's currently selling for $29. You purchase a call option at $30, and it cost you $2. Is the option in the money, at the money, or out of the money? The option price is $30. You can buy the shares at $30. Oh, okay. Not enough. I'm sorry. Can't take a joke. Everybody got one? Except for Jared. Sorry about that, Jared. Okay. So you can buy this stock at $30. But what's the current price? $29. It's out of the money by a dollar. Are you with me? Oh, good. Thank you very much, Ethel. Now, how much did it cost you for that? $2. So what's the next question? How did I do it? How did I word this? What's the break-even point? You've got to hit 32. The price for the stock has to hit 32 before you can actually make any money. And what happens if the stock price hits 36? How much would you make? You'd make $4 or 400, basically, because you have to multiply everything by 100. Well, it's $2 and then $4 per share, and they're in 100 share increments. So that's the kind of questions you're going to get. And of course, everything is in reverse with the put. It's going to be the opposite way. So do these on your own, not now. They will not be on the exam. I repeat. What? What the break-even point is $32. Because you paid $2 for the option. So you have to get to the price of 32 before you even make any money. If it were to hit 36, you would have made $4. Because you can buy the shares at $30, turn around and sell them at 36. So you make $6, but wait a minute, it costs you $2 for them. What if the price stayed at 29? What if the price stayed at 29? You lost your $200. Poof. Well, yeah, they suck. That's why we say instruction about syphilis is not an instruction to get syphilis. Okay. Does that make sense? Okay, let's continue now. That is options. Now.